Blog Talk Radio.
Era notte a târziu.
It was very late at night.
Stăteam pe o piatră afară.
I was sitting outside on a rock.
Lui Stan i-am arătat piatra că nu a fost la mine.
As Stan said, I showed him the rock when he came to my home.
Acolo stam și mă gândeam ce am făcut eu.
And I was just thinking, what did I do?
Plângeam să nu mă vadă familia.
I was crying so my family wouldn't see me.
Și odată am văzut că vine o lumină spre mine.
And all of a sudden I saw a light coming towards me.
Când am văzut lumina, am crezut că e o mașină.
When I saw the light, I thought it was a car.
În Italia și în România m-au urmărit cu mașina să mă omoare.
Because in Romania and in Italy they always try to run me over with cars. So I thought, they found me here too.
Dar n-a fost mașină,
but it was not a car.
Că lumina m-a cucerit,
the light surrounded me.
Și din lumina m-a auzit aceeași voce.
And out of the light I heard the same voice.
Era același înger.
It was the same angel.
Dumitru, de ce ești disperat?
Dumitru, why are you so despaired?
De ce m-ai pedepsit așa de tare?
Why'd you punish me so harshly?
Ce am făcut eu?
What did I do?
Ce nu m-ai lăsat pe mine în pușcărie?
Why couldn't you let me stay in prison?
Familia avea unde să stea.
But my family would have had a home.
Zic, eu n-am un implicat cap.
I don't have a bed to let my head down on.
De ce m-ai adus aici?
Why was I brought here?
Te-am adus aici că țara asta va...
Dumitru, I brought you to this country because this country will burn.
Și m-ai adus să mă arzi aici și nu m-ai lăsat să mor în pușcărie în țara mea.
So why did you bring me here to burn? Why didn't you let me die in jail in my own country?
Dumitru, taci.
He said, Dumitru, be quiet.
Urcă-te lângă mine.
Get beside me.
Ce aparat a avut, nu?
I don't know what the device was.
M-a tras lângă el.
But he pulled me beside him.
Mi-a arătat toată California.
And he showed me all of California. Do you see what I've shown you? This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Păcatul lor a ajuns înaintea lui Dumnezeu.
Their sins have reached God.
Și Dumnezeu a hotărât să-i pedepsească pe
foc. And God has decided to punish them by fire.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Las Vegas.
He came and showed me Las Vegas.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va...
And one day it will burn.
Mi-a arătat New York.
He came and showed me New York.
Aici e New York.
This is New York.
Aici
this is a Sodom and Gomorrah. In one day it will burn. And then he showed me Florida. This is Florida. This is a Sodom and Gomorrah. And in one day it will burn.
You've been listening to the Wake Up America message with Dimitri Dudeman. For a copy of this very important message, please go to our website at handofhelp.com. Never before in the history of our country has our nation been in more jeopardy than now. Please order a copy of the video Wake Up America at the handofhelp.com website and get the warning out while we still have time. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast with Michael Boldea.
Hour with you and discuss a wide array of topics. Some you may want to hear about, others you might not, but everything we discuss, everything we delve into, has a purpose. I'm not just talking about things to fill 60 minutes. There is a purpose for the things that I choose to discuss on this program, and there's a reason for every topic that gets fleshed out. And thinking about it, at least half of the time, the reason we pick a topic, the reason we pick something to discuss, is to open your eyes to the reality of the times that we're living in, and hopefully to wake from slumber those who are still living under the misconception that they need do nothing, they need say nothing, they need see nothing, because they will not be here for much longer anyway, so what's the point? It's surprising and troubling how many Christians today have that mindset. It's surprising and troubling how many Christians today choose to sit on the sidelines, not even cheerleader, but they're not even cheerleading. If they can, you know, kneecap one of the players, all the better. But as far as doing anything productive for the kingdom, as far as engaging, as far as being involved, they choose to restrain themselves. They choose to stay out of the fray because in their heart of hearts, they believe that it's pointless. well, why would I do this if, you know, Jesus' return is only moments away? I've had conversations with a lot of people that have this mindset. And when you try to press them on why they don't think that they'll be here for much longer, the yarn begins to unravel. You start hearing words like pre-tribulation or pre-wrath, and we must be getting close, so Jesus must be coming any day now. You know what? I hope they're right. I really do. But the Bible contradicts this fanciful theory of Christians getting out right before the nasty bits of the last days start to play out. And if we're going to be here for at least part of those days, why, pray tell, would we not do our utmost to make sure that we've done everything we could to mitigate fallout? Look, when I put myself in a dangerous position, I've got no one to blame but myself. When I put myself in dangerous circumstances, I've got no one to blame but myself. I wonder how many Christians would be yanking their hair out right now had the election gone the other way, had a different individual being appointed to the Supreme Court, and had they started to rule in such a way wherein your faith became illegal. Look, I saw an article just the other day that just made me smile. Everything after this particular thing, as far as I'm concerned, is just gravy. The title of the article was simply this: Gorsuch is the new Scalia. If you have no clue what I'm talking about, Neil Gorsuch is the newest Supreme Court justice, and he replaced Antonin Scalia, who was found dead with a pillow over his face, shortly before the elections. But his death was ruled, natural causes, of course. And there was a big battle because the previous administration wanted to appoint someone to the Supreme Court immediately. For once, the Republicans sort of grew a backbone and said no. And so it got dragged out till after the elections. I don't think the Democrats fought too hard for it because never in their wildest dreams did they think that Donald Trump was going to be president. They thought that depends Barbie would be in the White House and she'd appoint someone closer to their interests and to their libertine ideology. But things didn't turn out the way they thought they would. And so we have Neil Gorsuch. And one of the main reasons that I kept harping on, every time I came on the radio, every time I did an interview, it seems the last couple months before the election, one of the main reasons I kept harping on about getting out and voting this past election cycle was precisely because whoever won the election was sure to appoint at least one and perhaps as many as three justices to the Supreme Court. Just wrap your mind around that one. At least one, the minimum, is one, and we have Neil Gorsuch right now. It's possible that by the end of a 4 or 8 year cycle, two more Supreme Court justices will vacate. Let's just say Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a teenager when Lincoln was assassinated, basically. So, go towards the light, Ruth, go towards the light. It's very probable that one, if not two more, Supreme Court justices will get appointed during this current administration's stint. And it doesn't take a crystal ball. It doesn't take prophetic insight to discern what sort of libertine the other side would have picked. This past week, we got to see Neil Gorsuch in action. And as another article so bluntly stated, Gorsuch is already pushing the Supreme Court right on religion, guns, and gay rights. Now, in case you're wondering what right means, it's a good thing for us. Not so good for you know, the people having a meltdown currently. That is a very, very good thing. Who knows? Just think of it. You might just be able to refuse service to someone because it would violate your religious beliefs and not have to go to jail or go broke over it. My, oh my. Who'd have thunk it? Wouldn't that be nice? Huh? Wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be nice to actually have freedom of religion? To actually be free? We all know the case of the baker in what was it, either Oregon or Seattle, who basically lost their business because they refused to bake a cake for a homosexual wedding due to the fact that it contradicted their religious beliefs. So they got fined, I think it was $173,000. It was very ugly because the other side is very militant. The other side is looking for an excuse to be offended. They're looking for an excuse to be outraged. And up until now, they had the courts on their side. This case of the baker is actually going to be heard in the Supreme Court of these United States when they go back into session. So, again, my question is this. Wouldn't it be nice to actually see the immense power of the perverts and the pederasts, to see the immense power that they've been wielding via the courts be neutralized by some sane decisions in the Supreme Court? As Steve Vladek, who, oddly enough, is a CNN Supreme Court analyst and professor of law at the University of Texas, said, one of the biggest themes of Justice Gorsuch's confirmation process was his commitment to an especially strong view of how the Constitution protects religious liberty. It would seem to me that he is holding true to his statements during the confirmation process. And I, for one, think that this is a net positive, no matter how you try to dissect it. And one of the things that frustrates me, at least about the church as a whole, is its consistent myopia and narrow-minded thinking comes to chain reaction causing events such as a vacant Supreme Court seat, a presidential election, and possibly affecting the body that is known for passing down supreme law or the supreme law of the land towards a more moral and conservative center, depending on who won the presidency. It's embarrassing that the godless can be so forward-thinking while the church is only concerned with what's in front of its nose. Look, let's do some math here. I know, it's y'all are sick of hearing about this stuff. I've gotten the letters, thank you. I've gotten the emails. But I'm trying to drive home a point. Because apparently now that there was a modicum of victory, that this side won, everybody's going back to sleep. And the loons are out in full force. Pretty soon they'll either start killing people in the streets or setting themselves on fire. So let's do some math. Let's take out a notepad and see where we stand. The godless, the morally vacuous souls in this nation, have infiltrated academia. They've infiltrated positions of power. They've infiltrated the courts. They've infiltrated the church. And we're going to get to some examples a little later on in the program. They've managed to actively influence culture towards darker and darker behaviors because they saw the long-term prospects of what they were doing. They realized that they would control everything top to bottom within a generation if their plans were to come to fruition. Meanwhile, we're preaching to congregations whose average age is, what, 87? At any time anyone has the temerity to say that perhaps we should be doing a bit more, perhaps we should be a bit more active, perhaps we should defend what we've been given instead of laying it down at the feet of the enemy and hoping he lets us be. Anytime anyone has the temerity to say anything, they get bludgeoned by the church mercilessly and called all manner of names. Look, to be perfectly frank and honest with you, because I'm not one for baseless hope. I'm not one for baseless enthusiasm. I'm a realist. This is the way I'm seeing this play out. And I'm sharing this with you because, hey, you're taking the time to listen, and hopefully you'll get something out of it. Something might click just a little bit. But we're like the English during the Revolutionary War, insisting on decorum and dignified warfare, while the enemy has mastered guerrilla tactics. And they're attacking from every blind spot and behind every tree and behind every bush. Still some that insist on dignified warfare. There is nothing dignified about war. If you've ever seen someone die, there is no dignity in it. So let's not fool ourselves that we are better people because we are fighting a dignified battle. Look, because the English could not adapt to the new style of fighting because they thought guerrilla warfare to be beneath them, 13 ramshackle colonies brought the British Empire to its knees. And right now, between the world and the church, we're the English. The world is cunning and conniving. And they know guerrilla tactics. Meanwhile, we lock ourselves in our churches and check to see if we have any dirt under our fingernails. And have to run to our fainting couches anytime someone says, hey, maybe your duty as a faithful believer, maybe your duty as a Christian, maybe your duty as a son of God isn't to hide in a wine press, hoping that the enemy passes by. Maybe your duty as a child of God is to stand boldly and make logical, reasonable arguments that will deflate the insanity that is being spread throughout this nation like a virus. And you know what? The hopeful thing is that it seems ever so slowly people are waking up to the reality that you can't be on the defensive all your life and still expect to have any sort of demonstrable victory. At some point, you have to go on the offensive. At some point, you have to counterpunch. You just can't stand there with your guard up, hoping you don't get clipped on the chin. At some point, you have to strike. And judging by recent events, it seems that the other side has gotten so cocky, they've gotten so full of themselves, that it doesn't take much of a counterpunch to put them on their backside. No one said anything for so long that CNN of late simply started making up stories to drive their narrative. This is what happened. If you've heard of the fake news and if you've heard of the CNN debacle, this, in a nutshell, is what took place. CNN, or reporters at CNN, simply started making up stories to drive their narrative. And this went on and on until someone decided they'd had enough of being punched in the face mercilessly, and they decided to do something about it. Within 36 hours, CNN was known as the fake news network. Three reporters have been fired. The entire enterprise is in disarray. And personally, I think this is just the beginning of their troubles, because they have been pushing a false narrative for the better part of 6 months without an ounce of proof or any corroborating evidence. That's right, the magic word, evidence. The only people that are still seeing Russians are Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi. That's it. And even Nancy's kind of, you know, walked it back a little bit, because she's realizing, uh-oh, there's nothing there. The only one still loon enough to just keep going at it full barrel is, of course, Maxine, I'm a peachum, Waters. So, that was good. And look, it didn't take a lot, did it? Just think about this. Contemplate this for a second with me. One well-placed counterpunch has absolutely devastated the most trusted name in news, pomposity. It has knocked them down a few pegs, and it has exposed the lunacy of the left and the lengths to which they will go to undo what the people of this nation have voted on. Like I said, everything else is gravy from here on in. Am I going to get an apology from all the people who wrote me and told me I was deceived about Neil Gorsuch and how he was a secret progressive and how he would be like a Trojan horse on the Supreme Court? Am I? I don't think so. I'm not going to hold my breath for any apologies. But I mentioned the man's name when I said, hey, looks like a good choice. Oh, emails out of the woodwork. You are deceived, brother. Look, at least be intellectually honest, huh? Because I know those of you that wrote me those emails listen to the program. So to those of you who wrote the nasty notes about how I was being duped by Gorsuch and how he would end up wearing a rainbow robe on the Supreme Court and mandate homosexuality for all, at least have the decency to say that you were wrong. Because if you don't, then you're no better than the fools who insist that the science has been settled as far as global warming is concerned, but not so on biology and the fact that you're born either a male or a female. You're reaching that level of ridiculousness if you are unwilling to admit that you were wrong, and that perhaps we won't be marched into jail cells at the barrel of a gun for speaking the truth in this country for a little while yet. Will we eventually? I believe we will. Because, you see, the other side adapts far more readily than we do. And they are shoring up their weaknesses. They're seeing where they went wrong. And since telling lies, because that's what they are, they're telling lies. Since telling lies comes so naturally to them, it's only a matter of time before they will lie themselves into power again. So just keep that in mind. Look at these 4 years as grace, and be about the Father's business. I'm going to bring it back around to this, because it's not about politics, but it's about the environment created by one political party or another. You know, maybe be a little more vocal about Jesus. without that nagging fear that some limp-wristed gentle person will entrap you and record you and then sue you for hurting their feelings because they believe that they were born mentally ill and did not become mentally ill. There's that. Meanwhile, it would seem that Benny Hinn's protege is in a wee bit of hot water. And yes, the man was Benny Hinn's protege, because these two were as thick as thieves. I'd turn on my TV whenever I was traveling, you know, whenever I had to preach somewhere, and every time Benny Hinn would come on, this doofus would be right next to him going on about abundant blessings and how sowing them seeds will make your harvest grow. So yes, do not be deceived. This man was Benny Hinn's protege. Now, in case you have no clue of who I'm talking of or about, it's a guy who you can tell just by looking at him is a two-bit hustler. I mean, you can tell it from the jump. I mean, snake oil salesman, sort of slimy. Just looking at him, you don't even need discernment. You just need to see the way he acts and the way he dresses and the mannerisms thereof. But apparently the federal government had to catch up to him because discerning Christians, you know, sure didn't stop sending him money. And by the looks of it, a lot of money. We're not talking 20, 30 bucks here. When I read through the article of what this man had done with the money that likely very poor people sent him, because they believed they were going to get a check for 1,000% return on their investment. It boggles the mind. A former Charlotte preacher, the article begins, who wrote the book Please Don't Repo My Car, there's a catchy title, was indicted on tax charges Thursday. In case you're wondering, the man's name is William Todd Kuntz, but he goes by Todd Kuntz when he is fleecing the flock and when he is taking money from the people of God. William Todd Kuntz enjoyed a life of luxury, federal prosecutors contend, by claiming as business expense. Now listen, I need you to open your ears and listen. This is how William Todd Kuntz was rolling. By claiming as business expenses the $1.5 million condo he and his family lived in as their parsonage and the luxury vehicles they drove, including three BMWs, two Ferraris, a Maserati, a Land Rover, and a partridge in a pear tree. So, these are the cars that a man of God, hallelujah, sow your seed, I am a man of God. These are just the automobiles that Mr. Todd Kuntz had in his possession that he claimed as, well, business expenses. Three BMWs, two Ferraris, a Maserati, and a Land Rover. I'll let you do the math on the retail prices of those babies. And I'll, if I were a betting man, I would wager that he did not purchase any of those used. So good on him. Now, he also claimed a Regal 2500 boat, 400 charges at movie theaters. 100 times 2, that's 800 hours. But see, when the only thing that you say every time you get in front of a camera is, sow your seed, hallelujah, send me your money, you don't have to study. You don't have to read the Bible. You don't have to go through commentaries. You don't have to be prayerful. You don't have to spend time alone with God. You can just go catch the latest flick 400 times and then write it off as a business expense. What kind of a cheap jerk do you have to be to write off 400 movie theater tickets as a business expense for a ministry? 400! That's more than one a day! And if you thought it was too much, get ready for more! $228,000 in clothing purchases. I'm speechless. Yesterday, I bought a shirt for $3.28 at Walmart. It's a beautiful V-neck made of spun cotton. Imagine how many spun cotton V-necks I have to purchase from Walmart for $228,000. Almost a quarter of $1 million just in clothing. But wait, there's more. And $140,000 in meals and other entertainment as business expenses with no proof of expenses, no proof that the expenses were for business. So $140,000 for meals. The China buffet in Watertown, Wisconsin is like $780. I'd have to eat a lot of China buffet for $140,000, I'm telling you. $140,000 in meals and other entertainment. Alas, alas, dear Mr. Kuntz, alas. There was no proof that the expenses were for business. According to a federal criminal bill indictment returned by a grand jury in Charlotte last Thursday. But wait, there's more. He spent $21,000 at a designer jewelry store and $14,000 at Diamonds Direct Jewelry Store, the indictment said. So, you know, store not treasures for yourself on earth. Rather sow the seed into the ministry. I guess, you know, don't do as I do, do as I say, huh, Todd? $21,000 for jewelry, $14,000 at Diamonds Direct. The Lord good. Glory! Ain't the Lord good? See, this is why Christianity has become a mockery. This is why I'm almost embarrassed to tell people I'm a preacher. Because of schmucks like this. Because of stains like this on the household of faith. Meanwhile, Christians are being beheaded and crucified and set aflame while they're still alive. Kuntz is riding around in 3 Beamers, 2 Ferraris, a Maserati, and a Land Rover. And apparently he spends so much time at a movie theater, they allowed him to bring his own Barco Lounger. But Brother Mike, you sound indignant. You sound too passionate. We must be calm and have decorum. You have decorum. I'm angry, and rightly so, and if you're not angry, something's wrong with you. The indictment charges the 50-year-old Kuntz with 3 counts of failure to pay taxes and 4 counts of aiding and assisting in the filing of false tax returns. Kuntz, who now lives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, has been ordered to appear on a summons in U.S. District Court in Charlotte, or Charlotte, if you will. Oh, mercy. Kuntz, I'm going to finish reading this, even though I don't want to. It's making me sick to my stomach. Kuntz was the minister of Rock Wealth. There you go. International Ministries from 2010 to 2014. According to the indictment, he authored numerous books on faith and finances. Of course he did. Because it's easy to sit there and come up with a theme designed to separate people from their hard-earned money. And you know what? I've met enough desperate people in my life to realize that when you reach desperation, reason and logic don't get the airplay that they should in your heart and in your mind anymore. You grasp at straws, the most fanciful straws. So if someone comes along, and as my friend Jeff says, offers you some magic beans, you lay out your last $100 for those magic beans, hoping for a miracle. And then the miracle never manifests, of course, because this man is a charlatan and he just took you for $100. But do you go knock on his $1.5 million door? No, you don't. You grow bitter at God and you think that God failed you. So the books that he wrote on faith and finances, in case you want to, you know, go to Amazon and support his ministry, are Breaking the Spirit of Debt, Oh Glory, 7 Most Common Money Mistakes and How to Avoid Them, and of course the aforementioned Please Don't Repo My Car. He also operated the for-profit companies Legacy Media, of course he did, and Kuntz Investments. Let me guess, the Holy Spirit has ordained these investments. It's like investing with God himself. Would you like to invest some money? Come on. Why wouldn't you? A man of God has the blueprint for wealth. Now you could get on the wealth train for $299.99. Shipping and handling apply. Now, Kuntz unequivocally asserts his innocence, of course, and will vigorously defend himself against these charges, of course. His lawyer says, Todd Kuntz has always endeavored to follow the law and be a good citizen, father, and minister. Well, he failed at the minister part. Don't know about the father or the citizen. But as far as minister, big fail. He trusted others to manage his finances and taxes for him and was shocked to find out he was under criminal investigation by the IRS. You claimed a Maserati and 400 movie tickets as a business expense. You claimed $250,000 and almost $150,000 in food and clothing as a business expense. We'll take your word for it. You're innocent. We expect that after hearing all the evidence, a jury will fully vindicate Mr. Kuntz. I'm thinking not. By finding him not guilty of all charges. What's his lawyer going to say? My client is so slimy, he gives snails a run for their money. He took advantage of little old ladies and poor people who are at the end of their rope. He felt no guilt about putting his increasing backside judging by the food bill into a brand new Maserati and two Ferraris. He actually slept at night without the aid of Unisom. What kind of heartless individual, what kind of man absent of empathy do you have to be able to sleep at night knowing that you've conned people out of their last red cent? But hey, you got a $1.5 million condo, a handful of cars. How many cars can you drive at a time? Three BMWs, two Ferraris, a Maserati, and a Land Rover. What do you connect them all with a chain and drive around your neighborhood like a little train? It's sad when people give themselves over to greed. How many cars can you drive at one time? This continues. The indictment accuses Kuntz of a check-cashing scheme, of course it does, involving travel reimbursements for speaking appearances and for book sales. Kuntz regularly traveled to speak at various ministries that generally paid him a speaking fee and his travel expenses. The indictment said Kuntz hid income from the IRS by claiming the travel as a business expense while using reimbursements as personal income. In the average man's parlance, if you will, it's called double dipping. Yeah. Double dipping. To conceal the payments, Kuntz told his travel assistant to have the ministries make the reimbursement checks payable to whom? Feed the Hungry Ministries. Give to the Orphan Ministries. No, to Todd Kuntz. And to send the checks to his personal address. But wait, he trusted people he shouldn't have. Did those people use him as a puppet and say, send the checks to my address made out to me because I want to buy a Maserati? Exactly. Kuntz also told his travel assistant to bill the churches for a full fare, first class ticket, because, hey, if you're driving around in Ferraris and Maseratis, how dare anyone expect you to fly coach? Or look for a discount. Or use your air miles. Or, I don't know, drive. Bill the churches for a full fare first class ticket, although the tickets cost substantially less, the indictment said. Goody, goody gumdrops. He is accused of concealing and cashing 102 checks from 2010 through 2013 for travel reimbursements, speeches, and books and other products, totaling about $252,000 or three-quarters of one of his Ferraris. In 2014, he cashed 32 checks, totaling about $105,500 that also were not reflected in his accounting records, the indictment said. So, by my accounting, even though I never was a math whiz, you have 134 churches that gave this con man money, lots of money, invited him to come and speak to their congregations and rope them into either an investment or into giving to the ministry of God so that they may receive the harvest. Kuntz is accused of underreporting his income on his tax returns by not including as income payments made by his corporations and ministries for his personal expenses. Haha. That included payments benefiting his family members and payments for meals and entertainment. Kuntz commingled personal and business money against his accountant's advice. What happened to P being taken advantage of by people you trusted. His accountant told him he was a thief, and he told his accountant to shut up and take some money. From 2000 to 2014, Kuntz also is accused of filing delinquent U.S. income tax returns with the IRS. He consistently failed to make timely payments on his taxes, despite receiving multiple letters and late notices from the IRS, according to the indictment. So much for rendering unto Caesar what belongeth to Caesar. The charge of failure to pay tax carries a maximum prison term of 1 year and a $100,000 fine per count. The charge of aiding and assisting in the filing of false tax returns carries a maximum prison term of 3 years and a $250,000 fine per count. So there we are. Mr. Kuntz is about to be introduced to justice. And personally speaking, no vendetta, no ill will, but I hope they throw the book at him. I really do. Now, in other news, after more than, 20 years as a conservative leader, Paul Williams comes out as a trans woman. Now, I don't know who Paul Williams is. Who is Paul Williams? Just a guy in charge of a church planting organization. You know, nothing too major. So, yeah, now his name's Paula. And all the evangelical Christians who still hold the truth are just bigots and unloving and unwilling to understand. Yeah, great. Super. Hey, thanks, Paul. I'll be sure to, you know, search my heart to see whether or not it's receptive and tolerant and accepting enough of abomination and whatnot. We'll let you know what I find, but I wouldn't hold my breath for too long. So, yeah, I guess Paul is now Paula. Woohoo. The pastor of a 28,000 member church, or 28,000 member congregation, also resigned this week over personal misjudgments. Haha. Stating that he had betrayed the trust of God and his family. And although it is commendable that he was self-aware enough to walk away and attempt to be restored, what struck me was the congregation yelling, "Don't worry about it," once he explained how he had been less than the man that God expected him to be. And herein I come to a painful conclusion. Sheep have shepherds they deserve. I'm going to repeat that. It's good. Sheep have the shepherds that they deserve. So the man comes out and says, "I'm going to step down because of moral failings and betraying God and my family," which I'm assuming isn't that he got angry at a person who cut him off on the highway. And you have congregants yelling from the back pews, "Don't worry about it. It's all right. It's all right. Don't worry about it." There you go. Sheep have the shepherds that they deserve. So other than the financial improprieties and the moral failings, what exactly has the church been up to lately? Why is it that our voices are not heard? Is it perhaps because we're keeping silent? That the message of the cross is not being trumpeted now that we have a window of time in which to do it? Is it perhaps because we do not want to draw the ire of the godless, or worse, because we want to remain in their good graces? Look, we all know the parable of the talents, and I don't have time to get into it. But there was the man who received one talent, who said to his master, "Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid, and I went and I hid in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours." But his Lord answered and said to him, "You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. Therefore, take the talent from him, give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So even if you only have 1 talent, it's no excuse. Yes, some receive 5 talents, others receive 2, some just have 1 lowly talent. But whatever you have been given by the master, whatever he has entrusted you with, it is inexcusable for you not to do anything with it. For you to bury it and let it age in the dirt until the master returns, wherein you'll promptly return to him that which he has entrusted to you without interest and without having multiplied it. By the way, Brother Douglas, if you're listening, this dovetails well into your question regarding hell or Hades or the outer darkness or Gehenna, which are one and the same thing, except for Sheol. Sheol changes meaning from the Old to the New Testament. That's a whole different teaching. But as far as the gentleman you were referring to, I did get your question. I just didn't have time to answer it last week. You can start by telling him that Jesus didn't speak English. So actually seeing hell written in the Greek or in the Latin is a bit absurd. When Jesus speaks the parable of the beggar and the poor man, he refers to the rich man as having been relegated to Hades, where he was in torment. Then looking up, he saw Abraham from far away. Look, in the end, if he wants to play the semantics game, that's his call. A place of torment is a place of torment, no matter how you slice it, or what, you know, intellectual hoops you jump through. Whether you call it Hades or hell, whether you call it Gehenna or the outer darkness, torment does not cause one to envision sand between one's toes and umbrella drinks. And the one underlying theme of all of this, torment. We have Jesus saying, "But whosoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to stumble, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to enter into life maimed rather than having 2 hands to go to hell, into the fire that shall never be quenched, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched." Sounds cheery, doesn't it? Want to go? And Jesus continues in the same theme. He says, if your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to enter life lame rather than having 2 feet to be cast into hell, into the fire that shall never be quenched, where the worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. Again, same description of hell. Not on anyone's top 10 to-do lists, I don't think. I don't know, I'll take Fiji over hell as far as places to visit. And again, Jesus says, if your eyes cause you to sin, pluck it out. It's better for you to enter the kingdom of God with 1 eye rather than having 2 eyes to be cast into hellfire, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. So I understand your Jehovah's Witness brother or friend has a hard time letting go of denominational doctrine, because I've run across a lot of people who, once they put on the denominational goggles, man, that's it. They're denomination for life. It's like an MS-13 member. They get the face tattoos and everything. So you run into a Calvinist, oh man, they're going to hold to their point, even though you can demonstrably prove that their point is wrong, biblically speaking. Because we're not, this is not hypothesis. This is not feeling, this is not I think, this is Bible. And my feelings and my thoughts and my ideas and my what ifs cannot supersede the written word of God. And if Jesus spoke about hell within the context of the fire not being quenched and the worm never dies, within the context of better to get into heaven with one foot and one hand and one eye than go to hell fully formed, I don't know, then maybe dwell on it a little bit. Consider it. Jesus was never hyperbolic. He never exaggerated things for effect. He had no need. He was the Son of God. He walked on water. He raised the dead. Why would he need to exaggerate anything? And so when he speaks of hell in such dark terms, it's incumbent upon us to perk up our ears and you know, take a breath or two and go, wow, Jesus really doesn't want us to go to hell. Maybe we shouldn't want to go to hell either. So, Brother Douglas, I hope I've kind of answered your question. I didn't have time to get any deeper into it. Maybe next week. We've got 2 minutes left. I thank you for listening. I rambled on a little bit. It's what I do. So God bless you. God keep you. And Gino, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a very enlightening show. I'm amazed. And Mike's only maybe 25 feet away from me doing the show, but I'm absolutely saddened by the incredible deception that some people walk in to literally take the gospel and turn it into a casino, a money-making machine. And what a beautiful broadcast for Mike to bring this out tonight. I think it's sad that the gospel of wealth and prosperity has been propagated and caused so many to be hurt, wounded, some probably walking away from the faith after being fleeced. And I would urge you to let people know to check Michael's show out when we put it on YouTube and help blow a trumpet of warning. This is why God's going to punish America, because of the sin in the church. And Michael brought up two or three situations of people that have fallen into great deception and sin, including their who planted churches and now is transgender. That can only be done by a demon or an evil spirit possessing you. And how that door is open is why we have to guard our heart and walk with God and be above reproach. God bless you all for listening. This has been the Light of Truth broadcast.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast, The Light of Truth with Michael Boldea. If you would like to order a copy of today's broadcast, please visit our website at handofhelp.com. If you have questions about our ministry, you can email us at handofhelpoffice@aol.com or simply call us at 920-206-9910. God bless you.